Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
It is time for what is becoming a regular monthly feature, and rightly so. It's almost, we have letters from San Diego, we have letters from Los Angeles. Back with us now, of course, the awesome acting and writing talent, and indeed a scholarly individual as well. It's the fabulous Armin Shimerman. How are you, Armin?
Very good, Alex. Good to be with you again.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll be welcoming some old friends back to our Zoomer today, including Patricia Tolman. But joining us from Norwich at this very moment in time, being beamed in, is the wonderful Rebecca Bond. How are you, Rebecca?
Hello, very well, thank you. How is everyone?
Excellent.
Very good, Rebecca. Good
to welcome you back, and also connecting with due technology in every sense of the word, because as you'd expect from the author of Technology in every edition of the Star Trek Monthly magazine, how technology shapes the production of Star Trek, it's the wonderful and indeed colleague of mine at the University of Lincoln, Dr. Chris Dowes. How are you, Chris?
Unbelievable. You're so smooth, Alex. It's almost embarrassing to be in your presence. It really, really is. You silver-tongued fool.
Now, Chris, you know that we've been through sufficient meetings where sort of some notion of slickness is important when we go through the worlds of academia, etc. It's worth noting that you do head up the creative writing program. In fact, you launched the creative writing program at the University of Lincoln. So it's fair to say, Armin, that again, Trek influences us in so many wondrous ways. So great stuff there as well. And also connecting with us from North Carolina, she's recently just done a fine sequence on the Gene Roddenberry Questor tapes. An interesting text, which certainly polarised our Resonance Rewind team. It's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you all?
We're good, Jessica.
We're okay. I think we're okay. Just setting the scene, Rebecca is in Norwich, Jessica's North Carolina, Armin, obviously, you're in California, Los Angeles, and Chris, I believe, not too far away from Grimsby.
In Grimsby, in fact, which is very few people use that as a boast. But yes, I am indeed in Grimsby, which isn't as grim as it sounds before anybody asks. So there.
That makes sense. Well, Chris, I know you were excited when I said that we were going to have the awesome Armin Shimerman with us on the program today. So would you like to throw any questions to the great man at this moment in time? You talk Shakespeare, you can talk his fantastic text, Illyria. You can obviously talk Boston Legal. You could go Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You might even have some Trek questions.
I haven't got questions. I've just got a statement. I am honoured to be in your presence, sir, and it's an absolute delight. And when Alex asked me if I would be available, I said absolutely I would be available. So I would just like to say I'm an enormous fan. I would ask you, there is perhaps one question. What's more challenging, working with Ronald D. Moore or being in a meeting with your other university professors talking about grading profiles and things like that? Which would you find drives you crazier quicker?
Well, as an adjunct professor, I find grading to be a horror indeed. So I would pass it up to rather be with Ron Moore. in fact, I've stopped teaching for a while because I don't like grading so much, and I've got other things on my plate. So I've said, you know what, the university can get on without me, because I really abhor. How do you grade actors? How do you do that? Because I teach actors how to do Shakespeare. That I can do, but grading them on their talents, on their abilities, on their acting skills, that's beyond my pay scale.
Yeah, would that I could say the same, Armin, but never mind. We carry on regardless, and we still work our way through that process. And hopefully people like Rebecca and Jessica benefit from what we can actually sort of provide for them as they head through the journey of life itself. And speaking of the journey of life, Larry Nemechek's back with us. How are you, Larry? How is life with your good self also in Los Angeles? And finally, I've managed to get you on the same show as your fellow regular contributor to Star Trek Monthly, Chris Dowes. Usually Chris is the article I read first, but that's only because it comes ahead of your column with Treknology. And it takes a little while before I work my way through Treknology into, of course, your own particular sequence as well of deep dives as Dr. Trek would be. How are you, Larry?
Well, thank you, Alex. I was going to say to the journey there, because that's where you started with. It has been a journey. And the fact that that's the name of the new Voyager documentary is totally beside the point. But
Larry, I was there at the beginning of your journey.
Yes, you were, Armin. It's good to see you. Good to see you. Everybody. Yeah. Hi, Chris, again.
Larry, it's an absolute pleasure. We finally kind of meet virtually face to face. You're a name that I've come across for 20 odd years. So it's finally lovely to be actually talking to you. It's great.
That's true. Especially with that magazine being made on your side of the pond. It's very rare that I see anybody that works on it.
Right. Yeah, but they're in spirit, Larry. That's important.
But it's on its way back. So, sorry, Alex. We were just talking Star Trek magazine the other second.
And why shouldn't we? I mean, obviously, there's a Trek theme for that whole process, and we'll continue to work through that.
Oh, there is? Okay. Oh.
Larry, as I say, I can now actually sort of rest by the fact I've put you together with Chris on the same program and Armin, of course. But Larry, would you like to start off by throwing a question to Armin, or indeed sharing with us how you connected in the first place back in the 20th century?
How was that? How?
How did you connect in the first place? Was it Trek that brought you together?
Oh, yes. I think I've admitted to Armin that I did not stand in line for any tickets to any Buffy convention or anything. No, it was Armin. Actually, it was before DS9, or it was simultaneous, because I came to LA to work on my Next Generation book, and then other things developed and we made several trips and then moved permanently. But, you know, Armin was on the Next Generation. I was just amazed to figure out that the connective tissue between the face on the box and the early Ferengis, and then this guy who is now kind of lighting up the skies with his work on DS9, and then to find out, and then to go, oh, and the Buffy people know him too. And then, oh, and he did some Shakespeare stuff too along the way. So that was...
I think it's fair to say, Larry, that Renaissance man is something we can apply when we're referring to Armin. It makes sense, really.
I think we're late to the game. I think that's probably been an adjective tossed out there for a while.
Well, thank you all. Thank you all. And I think all of you as well are Renaissance people as well. So, and certainly the Renaissance has intrigued me for all of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Rebecca, it's been quite some time since you've been on the Midweek Drive. And I know you were excited to know that Armin was back with us today. Who would you like to throw a few questions to at this moment from your base in Norwich, as indeed a soon-to-be third-year English and journalism student at the University of Lincoln?
Well, first of all, I'd love to say thanks for having me back, because I've really missed it. I've just been really busy with work and things like that. So I'm really glad to be back. And I'm here to stay for a while again now. So hope you can all put up with me. I'd love to ask some questions. Armin, I haven't spoken in a while with you, and I was wondering what you've been up to since we last spoke. Have you been doing any, you know, more research or any writing or even just anything fun in your spare time? What have you been up to?
I have been doing a lot of research. I've been doing a lot of writing. I'm in the polish place in my second novel, the second novel, as well as the third novel already written. And but there's a polishing procedure that has to be done. So I've been immersed in that. I haven't done much acting. That's been out of the question, either because of COVID or because auditions haven't worked out. But I have another cap on, which I really shouldn't talk about at all, but I'm going to anyway. I am the chair of a scholarship committee that gives out awards to people like yourself going to college. And I've just reviewed 160 applications, each of which takes me about 45 minutes to review. So that's been hot and heavy for the last month and a half. And I'm happy to say I just finished yesterday. So.
Amazing. Sounds like you've been really busy then.
It is very hard to do. All of them deserve to be granted a scholarship. We have to see who needs the scholarship more than others. Usually, I'm happy to say our program gives about 85 to 90% of the applicant scholarships, some large, some small, but everybody gets a little help, I think.
So making dreams come true, which is fantastic. In fact, making dreams come true could be the subtext for Patricia Tolman's next autobiography, after, of course, Pleasure Thresholds, etc. Patricia, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. Welcome back to Los Angeles after your sojourn in Hawaii.
Right. Thank you, Alex. Nice to see you, Armin. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Patricia. Hello, how are you? Dr. Chris.
Good. Welcome. I'm really good. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much.
And of course, Patricia, there is a huge connection between yourself and, of course, Armin. And not only did you recommend Armin to the Midweek Drive, which is we're forever grateful, and of course, Larry, because your Trek background goes back to the time when, as a young girl, you would actually play the original Trek series, reinvent it with dolls, taking the lowing of Kirk, Spock, and the rest of the whole team.
Yes, you had to bring that up, didn't you? Yes, I did that. I did that thing. I did that thing little girls do with their Barbies and reenacted Star Trek and Dark Shadows, my two favorite shows.
And then, of course, you were in the series. So have you met up with Larry Nemechek in times past as well? I mean, because I'm just wondering, obviously, there's a critical line here. I think, have we just crossed over?
I think, Larry, the best we've done has been at a convention together, right? Otherwise,
yeah, we've crossed paths. I've interviewed you once or twice, but yes, I think conventions.
Yeah. Conventions are kind of awesome that way because we're all so busy working. You know, you get to know your castmates and then ancillary folks from other shows at a convention. And it's so much fun.
As well as conventions keep people in touch. People who have stopped working together usually don't see each other until the next job occurs. Conventions are wonderful about keeping friends in touch.
Exactly.
Well,
right.
Exactly.
I think they have something for fans to do too, as well at those conventions.
Fans? Are they do? There?
Yeah.
Honestly, Larry, you're so passe with respect to obviously customer satisfaction. So it's unbelievable. Chris, I'm going to give you a very difficult question at this moment in time. Babylon 5 or Star Trek? Where would you go to?
That's kind of not fair, Alex.
why would you do that to
although
me?
It's really unfair. Exactly.
I thought we were friends. God, what? Oh, yeah. I'll entice you. Armin's going to be on the show. Yeah. Pat's going to be on the show. Yeah. Right. Bang. Here's a really poor question. How about both?
Nice. Good answer.
Depending on the season. No, I mean, I don't know whether this is a well known fact, and I am certainly not banging any drums here. And I wish you hadn't put the Doctor before the Chris Dowers, but never mind. Thanks anyway, Alex. But I used to work for the Deep Space Nine comic book just after the show came out. And one of my favorite, in fact, my favorite thing I wrote, this was before it got bought out by Marvel and then Marvel went bankrupt and I lost all the money I was going to get, but let's not bring that up. The favorite story I ever wrote was a 6-page story called Memoirs of an Invisible Ferengi, whereby Quark he thinks he's stolen, and I don't understand why they never did this in the show, any show, a personal cloaking device from the Romulans. And so he puts this on and he goes invisible and he gets up to all sorts of hijinks, you know, hiding in people's showers and watching them getting undressed and all that kind of thing and trying to steal stuff from Odo and all that. And then it all turns out at the end that the Quark's really, really violently ill. And the Romulans just come in and take it off him and say, thanks, yeah, we've had a few problems with this. We just thought we'd try it out on somebody else. And that was basically the story, you see. But I could never understand why they didn't think of using personal cloaking devices like kind of in Dune, that kind of sort of like shield thing. There you are. But I'm going to change my answer. Definitely Deep Space Nine.
Thank you for that, Chris. Although either one would have been okay with me. My wife was an actress on Babylon 5. So.
Oh, no. Wow. Really fantastic. Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we got Kitty. We got Kitty. Yay.
And we got Pat for a while, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so blessed to have been part of that.
And as we know, Patricia, the catering was slightly better with Paramount and Star Trek than it was on Babylon 5. It's just an unfortunate fact, but there you go.
You know what? We had at Star Trek over at Paramount, we had what we called the Roach Coach, which was a food truck. And we would get vouchers, at least those of us on the stunt team. I'm not sure how the stars like Armin were treated, but we got vouchers for lunch and the Roach Coach had amazing Mexican food. So good. So good. So I loved that. And what we had at Babylon 5 is they had a catering, but unfortunately, the only space for us to eat were in a big tent out in the parking lot, which was right next to a recycling dump. So we had those fumes wafting over all the time. And no matter how good the food was, which it wasn't very good, it was always mitigated by the aroma of the recycling dump.
So, Pat, I have a union question.
Okay.
That's another hat I wore in the past.
That's right.
Didn't you have, you must have had a trailer.
Yes, we had trailers, little trailers. Yes, we did. And they were all, they were like Favorite Nation's trailers. There was no star.
But couldn't you have had your lunch in the trailer?
Sure. Some people did. They would take their lunch and go elsewhere. Actually, some people would even go in the sound stages because even those were more air conditioned than even the trailer. So.
And where did Peter eat?
Peter is a diva, you know. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. He's good. We liked actually hanging out with each other. So mostly we did suffer through the fumes and ate outside. I lost weight. I don't know about anyone else, but yeah, I mean, people really enjoyed each other. So it was kind of sweet.
The joys and farewells of Peter Jurassic at work. Jessica, let's turn to yourself. You've got a fabulous team here. Who would you like to throw a question to? Or have you got a general one you want to put into play?
Oh, I always love asking general questions, but I want to know, like, what is everyone's plans for summer? For July, I'd like to know if there anybody has like summer plans with their projects or anything like that, if anybody's working on anything. Armin, I'd love to hear from you first. If you could just talk about that. What's up for July?
Well, certainly I have a more writing and research to do for my second and third novel. But in August, I'm fortunate enough, Larry knows about this, to attend a Star Trek convention, the last of the creation Star Trek conventions. I will do that for a couple of days. And not only will I appear, but my wife, Kitty, will appear. And then the better part of our vacation will be to hop in the car and drive another 2 hours up to Utah. To a place called the Utah Shakespeare Festival, where I performed 2 years ago. And it will be a delight to go back and revisit that and see. I think we have tickets for four different Shakespearean plays. Wow. So that's our big plans for the summer. We don't have any plans really for traveling beyond that. We're still a little anxious about COVID. And certainly when we're in Utah, we'll all be wearing masks as opposed to California. But those are my plans. Thank you for asking.
Armin, weren't you recently doing some speaking for the pancreatic cancer?
Yes, that's very nice of you to bring up, Larry.
You and Kitty and Jonathan, I think.
And Jonathan Frakes. For those of you who don't know, and there's no reason why any of you should, about 17 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is a killer cancer. And she is one of the blessed people who was able to survive that. Jonathan Frakes had a brother who was also diagnosed. He, however, was not as blessed and passed away rather quickly. So the organization that helps to cure that disease, which is called PanCAN, which Larry was just mentioning, we became the spokespeople for PanCAN. And we're happy to say we raised about $63,000 for research and education about pancreatic cancer. And so this disease is very close to us. Kitty is a 17-year survivor. Jonathan's brother didn't do so well.
My father passed from pancreatic
cancer.
That's what got him.
Well, we will add him to our list. Thank you.
Wow, Armin, that's amazing.
Shows the quality that's there. Jessica, who to next?
How about Pat? I haven't talked to you for a bit, so
I know. like Armin, I'm finishing a book. I have what we call, I hope it's okay to say, a first draft of a book. Yeah, so I'm there, and then I'm working on which I hope to launch in July, a trip to Africa that I'm going to be doing with my travel business for the end of 2022. You know, all things going well with the pandemic. And I have a Patreon page that I've been developing a community on. I'm using Patreon as like a membership group. And we're focused on, I call it magical living, like making your life the adventure of your dreams. So that's what I'm doing. I'm kind of going into a whole new phase. We just did a 6-week program together. And now I'm making some changes that we're going to start July off with some fireworks for sure. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
It's just relentless, Patricia. I mean, it's consistently that, plus of course the B5 events page, the classic lines that you actually had and produced recently with the one-to-one scenarios that you, I mean, it's amazing. It's just a renaissance woman.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Alex. You're so supportive, and I really do appreciate that. Well, you're amazingly supportive. Gosh, it's helpful.
It's what we do, basically. Chris, any sort of questions you'd like to put either Larry, Armin, or Patricia, or indeed Rebecca or Jessica? It's open to you, sir.
Why do you keep doing this to me? You keep asking me if I want to ask people questions. I just thought I was along for a ride. I just wanted to sit and look at all these lovely people. I don't want to... I'm off the clock, Alex. I'm not working.
It's fair to say, if we're talking creative writing, Chris has already alluded to the fact that he's written a fair amount in the past for Warhammer, for Star Trek, and so on. And Chris, what do you look for when you actually are doing creative writing? Because, I mean, I would certainly say, I don't think I've as yet managed to point you in the direction of Armin's latest book, Illyria, but it is an absolute classic and is well worth reading in every sense of the word. Yeah, Patricia's nodding quite rightly. So,
yes,
Larry, you haven't read it as yet.
Thank you for being supportive. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, what do I look for in a book that I actually want to read?
In terms of creative writing per se, I mean, is it historical fiction? Is it adventure? What are the kind of key things?
I'm not a character based. I don't know. Is it a character? Is it a situation? Primarily, my first love has always been science fiction. That's from as long as I can remember, I've been a science fiction fan. But I've read plenty of other really, really engaging and intriguing things that have not been science fiction. But this sounds ridiculously trite, but I've been so busy getting the undergraduate program running over the last 4 or 5 years and then trying to make time to be a practitioner myself, to write myself. You mentioned Warhammer Games Workshop, and Larry knows how much time just a short article for Star Trek magazine takes. It's not just, you don't just, it's like days to get the thing put together. I haven't read anything for months, which is embarrassing because I'm always having a go at the students, the postgrads and the undergraduates. Oh, yeah, you can't be a writer unless you're a reader, blah, 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 which I 95% subscribe to. 5%, I'm never quite so sure, because that almost seems to suggest that if you read enough, you'll reach some kind of creative critical mass and then immediately become a great writer, which just doesn't happen. So I just like a rattling good yarn, really. I'm very, very old fashioned when it comes to my own desires. But I think it's, Armin, probably this has been an interesting thing for you to think about as an educator. It's like teaching comedy. You get to a point where it stops being funny, and so therefore it becomes absurd. You teach horror to a point where it isn't frightening anymore, so it becomes absurd. And you kind of teach writing to a point where you almost forget what you enjoy in writing yourself, because you have a sort of different filter on, like a professional pedagogic filter. You know this, Alex. You know it. You know it yourself.
I was being mischievous, Chris, because obviously having second marked a lot of your students' work as well, I'm kind of interested in terms of, you know, is there a kind of prescription you say?
I trust everything you say. I am that gullible. It's unbelievable. Come on the show. You'll have a great time. We'll have a few laughs. Go down to the coast. You know, yeah, it's great. And what do? You're just like, all right, Chris, over to you. You're in the chair. Stop it, all right? Can I just have a nice time? These are really lovely people. I don't get out often, all right? I don't get out very much.
No one gets out often.
Not anymore. You, Larry.
None of us get out very often. Let's just not enjoy it. Stop making it into work, man.
it's perfectly okay,
remember,
Chris.
What was the question?
You could relax and so on. In fact, Jessica's just actually reminded us that actually she was in your creative writing class last spring. So not only did she have myself dealing with Communication Society, she also had yourself as well. So there you are, Chris.
Right. Now, how embarrassed am I? Because I saw it and I thought, God, I know that face. And it's like, I'll just get my coat. This is just, this is just a massive show up.
It's perfectly understandable.
Are you setting me up? Did you enjoy it, Jess? Was I any good to you? Did you enjoy it?
I loved your class. I still actually think about it. I still have like the book that you gave us about science fiction and fantasy. I have it still. I adored that class. Oh. I had so much fun. I cannot sing its praises enough. Truly, you were so great.
Oh, stop.
Jessica and Chris, what was the name of the book about science fiction and fantasy?
Oh, no, it was a reader that I put together. Lots of different articles, lots of different... I just stole stuff from all over the place, really, and put my own stuff in as well, which I thought was...
You were being
which
professorial.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. All property is theft. Oh, yeah. Let's...
Steal with love.
But academic use only. Exactly. Yeah,
you can right. In another realm, we call that exclusive collectible. So that's what we call it, Larry. I call it stealing, but okay. It is. You can only get that in your class. That's what I'm saying, right? It's not.
It was not.
It's a collection of distribution. Yeah, articles and essays.
Yeah. Okay.
And clearly, Chris, it's perfectly understandable because, as you know, in terms of the magic of Zoom, the understanding people would actually say it's Jessica I. Fond, and you probably never said you never took anybody called Jessica I. Fond.
No, I thought that was a very strange second name, but I don't judge. I don't ask these things. You know, like, okay, whatever.
I typed it in wrong, and I don't know how to change it.
Don't worry about it.
I. Fond.
It's perfectly okay. It is radio after all. Patricia, I believe that there's another fabulous B5 event that's coming up in the not-too-distant future as well with Claudia Christian. Is that right?
Claudia, right. She's actually been pushed to August because she's going to be out of town. But yeah, we'll definitely have Claudia in, of course. And we've got a surprise for everybody for that particular event. And you my July guest, I'm not clear on yet. So still working on it.
You know that Claudia and I did a movie together in Italy?
No.
It's an unnameable movie. Neither one of us wants anyone to see it. But we spent 3 months together in Italy shooting this horrible film. But we had a phenomenal time in Rome.
Oh, my God. For 3 months? Oh, my goodness.
3 months.
Oh.
Well, that's your takeaway then, right?
And indeed, the other sort of connection is Claudia, like Larry Nemechek, has also been to the Scarborough sci-fi event, which is why I also connected with Claudia. Oh, back in the pre-pandemic days. Seems like such a long time ago. Let's go back to Rebecca, et cetera. Rebecca, have you got a general group question you'd like to throw to the team?
If I go back to writing, that'd be great, whether that applies to everyone or not, or if anyone wants to speak about it. But as we were talking about writing and everyone's kind of process or what you enjoy, I was just wondering what everyone's process is when it comes to that. Do you sit down and really brainstorm ideas, or does inspiration strike when you least expect it? Armin, I'll go to you first.
Okay, so in my first trilogy, I indeed brainstormed ideas with my co-writers and my publisher, and that's what we did. And that turned out to be the Merchant Prince series. In the present trilogy that I'm working on, I'm all by myself, so I have no one to brainstorm except myself. I just start writing and see where it takes me. I know what the beginning is and I know what the end is. The journey is to find out how to get from point A to point Z. Mm-hmm. I'd rather miss the collaboration, but then I get to write whatever I want. So it's a, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. But I probably should do more brainstorming beforehand, but I rather like being inspired by the muse coming to visit me and whispering in my ear what to write next.
I love that. And Chris, what about you when you write?
It depends who I'm working with. If I'm working with the Games Workshop with Warhammer, they pretty much always already come with a preformed idea and they give me something to develop. Things have basically ground to a halt with them because of COVID, because I was writing audio dramas for them exclusively for the last few years. And the studios have shut down and all the voice actors are out of work. And it's just absolutely awful because they had a new studio built there and everything over in Nottingham. And it's really, really sad. I've got two fully written scripts, which are likely never to be recorded now, which is a bit upsetting, but it's just the way it goes. You know, so these projects sometimes slip away. My own work, I'm actually working on an anthology of short stories that's going to get published at the end of this year. That's a kind of a classic going for a walk and an idea popping into your head thing. The good majority of those stories, a couple of them are redeveloped comic book stories from when I was a comic book writer, because I wrote comic books for nearly 15 years. And there was a couple of projects that never got done with it. Funnily enough, I used to write exclusively with a writing partner for years and years, comic books. And we had a great time. Really good for dialogue when you're bouncing off with people as well. It was great. Mm-hmm. A couple of them I'm developed into short stories. I'm looking about 9 or 10 short stories, about 70,000 words for the publication. Mm. And then, of course, and Larry will know this, there's the infrequent.
It's coming back, Chris. Right. It's coming back as you've frozen the background. It's a Grimsby connection, obviously. It's
not really.
It's coming back.
So that's all also quite set. Although it depends. It can be a little bit free. It's like a theme that you want to be writing on or something like that. Or then there's quite a bit of research to do. So actually, the answer is it depends on the people who I'm working for, really.
Yeah, definitely. No, I love that. And Patricia, how about you?
I'm so in awe of creative writers. I am. I write nonfiction. So, mm-hmm. You know, the first one was a memoir and the second one is Just kind of on the journey that I'm creating for my people. So it's more of a personal growth book, I guess. I hope it's more fun than it sounds.
No, definitely. Yeah. But is there a difference in process then for you to sit down and kind of recall all your kind of life events and experiences? How is that process different to a creative process, for example?
And I hated it. I hated it. It was awful. I was forced into it. So the first book, I was forced, honestly. And I needed the money desperately. And I was offered something from a publisher. And so she sent her editor over and I pulled out all of my photographs. And he chose like 350 photographs that he thought he'd like to use. At first, they lured me in saying, this will just be a scrapbook. You know, you can just, and then the editor's like, okay, Jason Davis, he'll say, okay, now you need to caption, you know, what are the names of the people? Okay, now we need more of a story. It was like, you stop that. I'm writing a book.
They're really reeling you. Yeah.
They're reeling me in. Exactly.
But yeah. The end product is superb, Patricia. As you Thank know, you. I mean, it's one of those I actually sent across for the Atlantic to actually get the whole thing. And it's superb. Well worth
it. You're so sweet. You're so sweet. Thank you.
Pleasure Thresholds, in case you're wondering the title, Patricia Tolman's biography. Larry, what about yourself? I mean, did you agonize over the topics for Trek? Do you sort of think, now, how can I actually work in a situation where I can deal with the sort of incarnation of Patricia Tolman on Trek, with Armin Shimerman's characters, with what do you actually go through on a basis?
Well, I'm with Pat here because I wish I could go back to the days when I was a kid and would spin out scripts in grade school of TV shows and we would do them at recess. Because about the time of junior high, I mean, I would love to find my Beverly Hillbillies and my Flintstone scripts that I wrote in second, third grade. I would love to find them.
Wow.
But since junior high or so, I've been just such a nonfiction person, even without Trek. And that's, you know, been my bread and butter. But I've got two or three research, reference, behind the scenes, historical type book ideas that are floating. But the last 5 or 6 years, when I found out where media was going and on a legit media production, what people got paid versus me interviewing, doing all my own transcripting and doing all my own work versus having a team to do it, I kind of went there and I've made a promise to myself that the pandemic has slowed things down. Life has done this, but we're getting back and working on my documentary, The Con of Wrath, intensely right now, starting in the pandemic. And I've told myself not to do any more distracting, shiny book projects until we finish the documentary. But having said that, yes, Chris, the magazine's been off. The official Star Trek magazine's been off. But Nick, the editor, just said that they're doing a redesign and they kind of took the year off for the pandemic. And it's coming back soon, so I'm going to get back to that's really been the only regular writing I've done, although I do my little Trekland Tuesdays live soapboxes every week, and I kept thinking I should just transcribe those and clean them up and, you know, put them up as blog pieces, but that's been pretty much where it is for right now. But I being on camera and talking and helping the community are two shows. I do a podcast live show with Dr. Ali Mattu, who's a geek psychologist, and we call it Life Support Live. And we say we're boldly going through uncertain times. That was a child of the pandemic. And we do that on Saturdays. And we do everything I do. I try to do at a time when most of the globe can be on, when we Zoom or live stream on Tuesdays and then on Saturdays. But that's where, you know, it's all been like this more than so much. It's easier to do. And I don't have as much back end and I don't have to have third parties dealing with me. But I've got some ideas. I'm just forcing myself to finish what I've got on the plate done first.
And we've always put forward the midweek drive as therapy, which hopefully maybe Mr. Javits could actually put on the NHS now that Mr. Hancock has had to go because of other sort of issues that he's had. You may have heard of it over in the States. Slight sort of issues with respect to in flagrante delecto aspects relating to that, really. A minor point.
I'm on Twitter at midnight, that's when I get all the really juicy UK commentary.
Which could well be a series in itself, Twitter at midnight. Jessica, you will be writing, I know this because we've spoken about it several times as your time as a midweek drive at the quintessential American novel. How's that going from your own point of view? You've heard what Rebecca's responses have been for her question. How's your own writing going?
It's, I feel very intimidated right now in the presence of so many published authors. I feel like I should not be talking about writing, but I've just been trying to get back into writing that's not academic papers. I wrote like my thesis was on Gothic writing and children's literature, and aww, it like knocked me on my grade. Yeah, it was very fun, but it just, I had to take a break from like words for a while. So I've exposing myself a bit. I've been writing like fan fiction since I was really tiny, since I was like 11. Oh. So I've been doing that again.
Anything on the Beverly Hillbillies or possibly
Flintstones? The Flintstones.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes, that's awesome. If you ever want to, if you want to send any things over to me to take a look at, you can send it anytime. I don't mind at all.
Thank you so much. I really
appreciate
it.
Can I send some stuff over to you, Chris?
Yeah, my door's always open. Yeah, hell yeah.
Chris, can you write it for me? That's what I do.
I'm a hack at heart, Armin, and I can bang it out for you in 20 minutes. No problem awesome. At all.
Wow, this is great.
There's always a reason, Chris, and I knew there was a rationale for getting you on the show. There we are.
Oh, you finally realize what I'm here for. Well, that's charming, isn't it? Perhaps Lincoln University is unrelatable. There we go. Yeah.
Okay. One giant PSA, Alex. This is great. Okay.
Yeah, brought to exactly. You by.
But it has brought us to the time where we have to start thinking about those last two questions. So, Jessica, would you like to go through the team and deliver them in your own unique North Carolina way?
I will try. Am I lagging a bit? I hope not. There's like a thunderstorm.
Oh,
can you hear me?
Yes,
we're okay.
Your audio is coming through and then your video is a tad laggy, but you're good.
Okay, we can do it then. So have y'all had a reasonably interesting Zoom link with us today? Armin, we can start with you. How have you been? How have you enjoyed it?
I always enjoy it. I beg Alex to have me back as often as possible. And thank you, Pat. This is my opportunity to say thank you for connecting us.
My pleasure.
Yes, I've enjoyed it. I love listening to the people tell about their lives. It's one of the reasons I enjoy going to conventions as well, is to hear what people who I don't know particularly tell their life stories. And I get a little bit of that here, and it's really quite delightful. And sometimes I steal things from my books.
Yes. So if I see the Flintstones or Beverly Hillbillies mentioned in
your contribution,
yeah, in your Victorian Edward, yeah,
it's a little hard to mention them in a period mystery, but yeah, I'll sneak it in somehow.
Armin's book is right up my alley. It's historical fiction, which is my favorite genre. So I cannot tell you how much I have enjoyed your book, Armin. I cannot wait for the second one on Tether Hooks here. So you guys read it. It's so good. Yes,
Guy
I Fox, love being
Guy
here.
Guy Fawkes Day.
Okay. Guy Fawkes. Okay.
Guy Fawkes Day.
Okay. All right.
Remember.
Absolutely amazing. Just works there. Okay, Jessica, keep going. Who to next?
All right. Maybe, well, Chris, it's so great to see you again. So have you enjoyed this call?
It's been so great on so many different levels. Alex will tell you, I will turn up to the opening of an envelope. So
Chris, not entirely true. We often have openings of envelopes at staff meetings, and we sort of have to sort of, you know, fight to actually get into that.
Well, that's when I'm going slipping into a catatonic state usually, but there we go. Yeah. I am so happy to be here. I genuinely mean that, because I just loved meeting up with people and talking to people, and it's just great. I just love it. So yeah, thank you so much, everybody, for just being such gracious, lovely people. So thank you.
Well, there we are. I mean, it's emotionally all sorts of ways. Patricia, what about yourself? Has it been good for you?
Absolutely, and I would love to come back. So thanks again. You're always so supportive. It's great to see you and meet you, Chris, and see you again, Larry.
Actually, Larry, you really should feature Patricia on one of the Roddenberry podcasts, I feel. You know, keep the connection going on that side of things.
We'll get there. The conceit is always we pull out a piece of paper and then figure out a way to update it to make it relevant or bring someone in. But we'll do that. Yes.
There's always a way. Rebecca, good to see you as ever. We'll see you on Rebecca Bond, Patricia Tolman, Jessica Burtis, Larry Namicek, Dr. Chris Dowes, and Armin Shimerman. Keep on keeping on. Be well, be happy, and be safe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jessica Burtis, flying the flag for North Carolina across the solar system.
Did you know that in 1991, a bill was passed by the North Carolina Senate changing the official proportions of the state flag from a length one-third more than its width to a length one-half more than its width?
Wow, there must not be a lot going on in the North Carolina Senate for them to have that kind of time on their hands.
Being supported by friends and family, obviously fairly critical to our psychological well-being and our emotional well-being and in general just our well-being. But it would seem that a recent survey suggested that when people do find themselves struggling, we still tend to prefer to go it alone, with 41% saying that they'd be reluctance to sort of get involved and tell people that they're struggling either financially or otherwise. Now to actually talk us through some of these extraordinary findings from BT and indeed talk about the Here For You campaign, we're delighted to welcome the ace social and behavioural psychologist extraordinaire, that's a wonderful Honey Lancaster James. How are you, Honey?
Hi, I'm good, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Very good. Now, in terms of this finding, is it still the manifestations of the stiff upper lip that is so endemic when it comes to Britain in general that we're seeing here? Or is it just a case of, well, you know, people like to do their own thing and they don't like to admit that they're struggling?
Well, I think it's probably a combination of the both, really. To one extent, there is a little bit of a cultural thing about not sort of talking to others when we've got problems and trying to soldier on. But I think another thing is just general sort of, we worry that if we're having problems in an area of our life, that somehow that suggests that we're not good enough or it reflects badly on us, when of course it doesn't. And it certainly at the moment, it reflects much more on what we've been going through as a nation, you know. So I think this survey from BT is quite interesting because they actually did ask about why people weren't so comfortable sharing their problems with others. And 63% said that it was due to just being embarrassed. And I think it's that sort of age-old stigma that's a key barrier for people to sometimes open up and tell people their worries. But we've, you know, many of us have got them. And in fact, they found that more than half of us, I think it was about 56%, feel more vulnerable since the pandemic, with problems like mental health, physical health problems, worries, financial circumstances and employment prospects, all kind of topping the polls of the kind of things that people feel vulnerable as a result of. So, you know, I think this is a one thing to take away from this survey, really, is that at least you're not alone. You know, you're actually in the majority if you're having some sort of problem at the moment, whether it's mental health, physical health, financial or whatever it is. You're not alone, and therefore you shouldn't feel worried about sort of speaking up about it.
A little over half of the over 75s actually very reluctant to ask for help. Again, maybe that's a cultural thing and we can understand why that's in place. I mean, strategically, why is it actually important to actually conquer that inner demon and be able to actually say, look, I can't cope, I need to actually have assistance? Why is that such a vital part of the human condition?
Well, it's so vital, mainly because just, you know, we are social beings and actually we do feel better when we share our problems. That's the one thing on an emotional level. But purely on a practical level, what we find is that, you know, there is often a lot more resources and a lot more help that's available to you that you just don't know about unless you actually do sort of talk to someone about it. And interestingly, you mentioned earlier BT's campaign, the Here For You campaign. They've launched that to basically highlight that there is a wide range of products and services available to their customers who need extra support. So from they have a home tech expert service where basically if you're someone who wants to get connected and wants to set things up, but maybe you're not that comfortable with technology for some reason, they will send someone out to your house to set you up and set your equipment up for you, which people don't tend to realize they'll do. They also have things like BSL video calling, so for British Sign Language users, to make sure that even people who are affected by hearing loss or whatever can still connect with others and chat to people, so essential. They've also got, which I think is brilliant, they've launched something called Home Essentials, which basically offers half-priced connectivity services, so broadband and calls and things, to people who are on universal credit or a range of other means-tested benefits. So that means, you know, that's about 4.6 million families across the UK can benefit from that with half price on their broadband and their calls if they're on low income. So there are lots of things that are out there. And I think ultimately, if we don't talk to others about our difficulties or whatever our problems are, we tend to miss out on a lot of the resources and things that are available. So another thing that they've been doing actually is they've launched a training program with 12,000 of their customer service operators and colleagues, so that if you do call them up, they are actually better trained now. They're trained to respond with, you know, empathy and curiosity and to get to know you, and not to, so you don't feel like you're talking to a robot who wants to get you off the phone. You know, you talk to a real human being who actually wants to hear what you've got going on and wants to help. So I think that's another thing. And as a society, maybe now post-pandemic, perhaps we need to try and look for some of the positives that have come out of this. And I think, you know, organizations like BT are responding to our increased needs for humanity and for connection. And we want to speak to human beings because we need to. And we've realized that over this past year.
It's interesting that you mentioned, obviously, speaking to a human being. There's frequent occasions where one feels as though one needs to give the Turing test just to confirm that the person you're speaking to isn't just an artificial automaton. But I won't mention any companies, but there we are. In terms of the other thing you mentioned there, honey, which is fairly critical, the digital divide, we've talked about that quite a lot, but there is a situation whereby we are connected across the country in terms of the web in most cases, but there are lots of people who literally fall between the cracks. They don't have that connectivity. I speak from personal experience. A year or so ago, because most of my work was actually at university and so on, when the pandemic struck, I had to effectively get connected fairly rapidly because I was one of those rare people who didn't actually have that sort of system in place. So lots of my students as well had similar instances as well from that perspective. Is this a case of ensuring that whilst we may never be able to say never again, at least there is a sort of situation in which that infrastructure of care and support will be presented and provided for us and actually be in place?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is about, I think there's a lot of people who perhaps were less connected beforehand and who sort of realised the need to do that. I mean, in my family, for example, I've got elderly parents, excuse me, and my dad, you know, needed to get connected. We needed to teach him how to make a video call and things like that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have seen us, you know, for so many months. So I think for some of us, it was that kind of realization that perhaps we are lacking in a bit of connectivity or we need a bit of help. I think now it's, you know, lots of people have recognized the need to do that, but still don't realize that they don't have to struggle on with it on their own, that there are services out there to help you, designed to help you. Because let's face it, you know, we are living now in an increasingly digital world. And I think anyone who sort of does feel a little bit left out in the cold from that, you know, can really suffer the effects of that. And they miss out on certain services and helpful things. So I'm all for any campaign, actually, that helps people get connected and not just sort of tells them they should be, but actually will come out to your house and plug things in for you and set you up. That's important, because I think sometimes just getting instructions or being told what to do still feels very overwhelming for many people.
Yeah, well, as I say, I can use those immortal words, tell me about that, honey. But I managed to get through it, so that's the important thing. So that's by the by. And clearly this was before BT.com finally set up the BT.com/hereforyou campaign, which is where you can actually find out further details, including, of course, a variety of other skill sets and aspects that relate to home essentials and so on. We're going to wrap up with two what I call customer satisfaction questions, honey. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Always, Alex, always. It's always wonderful to come on, and we always have a good chat.
Well, there we are, you see. That's why we love having you on board. So can we look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future?
Of course, anytime.
Honey Lancaster James, the awesome social and behavioural psychologist extraordinaire. Huge thanks, and be well.
Thank you so much, Alex. Have a good day.
So, cataracts, not a very pleasant situation, and especially when we have 500,000 people with cataracts in the UK who are risking unnecessary sight loss. And to talk us through this particular challenge, we're delighted to welcome, first of all, the General Manager at Johnson & Johnson Vision. That's wonderful, Samantha Whiting. How are you, Samantha?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. And actually, to share with us his own particular experience of cataract surgery and so on, retired helicopter pilot for the Royal Navy, the fantastic Richard Seymour. How are you, Richard?
Very well, thank you very much.
Richard, could you share with us your own particular experience? Because I think it'd be quite fascinating for people to just listen to your own journey in this, in terms of how you went up to surgery and beyond.
I noticed a gradual, I had a regular eye test and they diagnosed cataracts and said that there was nothing that serious, but I did notice a little bit of a loss in distance sight. And then a year or so ago, they suggested that probably having a cataract operation would be a good idea. So then I pursued it further and a few friends of mine have had it done. And I was called forward really in February, and I had the operation done in March, and it was absolutely brilliant. I was a little bit nervous initially, but was reassured by everyone that I spoke to, and the service was absolutely fantastic. And I had one eye done, the right eye, and it's perfect, and I'm looking forward to have the other one done in due course. So I would encourage anyone to go for it.
Samantha, the fact that cataracts are the leading cause of blindness in a global situation, they are very serious. You actually hear the word and people will panic. How do we actually assuage people that, just as Rich has gone through the process, this is not necessarily the end of everything?
Yeah, I thank you. Great question. So June is Cataract Awareness Month, and I think, you know, as part of Johnson & Johnson's campaign around Prioritise Your Eyes, and in line with the Global Health Survey that we've recently undertaken, the objective is to really drive awareness and better inform people about cataract surgery. You know, the findings, you know, are quite stark, that only 1 in 5 people diagnosed with cataracts or have cataract symptoms go ahead with treatment. And if you delve a little bit deeper, you know, the reason behind that is that 33% talk about that fear of surgery, and then a further 21% talk about lack of information about the procedure. So I think, you know, there's certainly lots around informing patients, re-educating yourself about the procedure, what it involves, what are some of the great outcomes from cataract surgery to help, you know, drive some comfort levels to going ahead with your treatment plan.
Richard, does what Samantha was just saying there, does it resonate with yourself, especially the fear? I mean, I can't imagine that any helicopter pilots in the Royal Navy, I mean, you're fearless as a matter of course, really, but, you know, was this something which you thought, oh dear, you know, is this just a case of Anno Domini? Is it a case of time passing on? Is it going to be a sort of a challenge? What were your thoughts?
I didn't really see it like that. I think I was reassured by talking to other people. I realized at that stage it wasn't that serious. But I was finding that my long distance vision was certainly not as good, although I did wear glasses for that. And then I decided to go for it, and then got called forward for an operation. But they did reassure me at the time that explained all the risks involved and everything else, and said it's really entirely up to you. And from then on, really, I didn't have any misgivings. And the actual surgical procedure, it was done on the NHS, was absolutely first class. And it's very quick. And I was actually seeing perfectly with that eye as soon as I took the bandages off in about 3 or 4 days. And when the team called me up 5 days later to find out how I was, I mentioned this, and she said, well, I'm delighted to hear that. And when you've had the other one done, you will really notice a huge difference. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Samantha, obviously we're talking about cataracts today and awareness of cataracts, but there's another C word that's been impacting all of us for the last 15 or 16 months, and that's COVID. Clearly, from that aspect, have people also been reluctant to go for eye checks and eye tests, etc., simply because, understandably, they've been really quite worried?
Yeah, without a doubt, I think, you know, it's changed people's comfort levels with going and having treatment, whatever that treatment may be. But I think, you know, things are starting to move on now. People are starting to, you know, be more proactive with their treatment. And I think hospitals and opticians and private hospitals as well have made a significant effort to improve people's comfort levels. They've introduced improved infection control methods, you know, communicating with the patients about what controls and extra measures have been put in place, you know, to try and drive and improve those comfort levels. And I think there's lots of other options available to people if they don't want to go into clinics. I noticed when I was in my local opticians in Wetherby a couple of weeks ago, there was a sign on the wall saying, you know, if you don't feel comfortable coming into the opticians, we do home appointments. So, you know, there are lots of ways people are finding now to still continue with your treatment, to continue looking after your eye care, even though we're still hopefully in the latter part of COVID.
I mean, Richard, was COVID something which you were concerned about? Was it a case of, no, I have my two jabs now, let's bring on the cataract surgery?
No, I think I would entirely endorse the fact that I was, you know, I've been very careful about COVID in every respect. And I think that the eye specialists were extremely, I had no concerns about that at all. It was all very well, it was controlled entry and they were sanitizing everything. And it was all, I didn't feel uncomfortable about that at all. I think it was all very well handled.
So Samantha, clearly the message that needs to be brought to the fore here is, for goodness sake, get your eye tests, get your eye tested regularly, get those things sorted through. Where would you point people, Samantha, from Johnson & Johnson to actually sort of find out further details about best way forward and making those initial contacts?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of options. You know, the carefully navigated, the internet has a wealth of information. Your healthcare providers also have a wealth of information with patient information leaflets. Talk to friends, family so that have had this procedure as well. As Richard said, I think there's an awful lot of comfort. And, you know, you can get very well informed from talking to people anecdotally that have had the procedure. And in terms of the survey, the Johnson & Johnson Vision Survey, if you want to understand a little bit more about the detail behind that and some of the data behind that, you can find that on our website, Johnson & Johnson Vision. And there's plenty of information there as well.
Well, I'll avoid from actually saying happy Cataract Awareness Month, because that would just be ridiculous. We've got too many sort of aspects to start off with. But I will say certainly to your good self, Samantha Whiting, General Manager at Johnson & Johnson Vision, of course, and to ace former helicopter pilot Richard Seymour, huge thanks. Take care and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.